Good evening. We'll be starting in a few minutes.
Okay.
One or two more minutes, I'm turning on my computer, and it's a slow process. please join me in the singing the Anabakoa. All of it, Gimel Yud Tav Tzadi. Kabel Rinat Amchas Vakfeinu Ufre Shayan Sintet Nun Nagibor Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Kaf Shin. The letters of the month of Nisan, the Dalet that created the planet Mars, the planet Ma'adim, the planet of wars, and the He that created the constellation Tale, the Lamb, the Aries. Barchem Tacharem Lachem Isitata
Amid
Betet Resh Tzadi Tav Gimel Pasim Kadosh
Derotivka
Nael Adatach Et Kufet Et Nunayin Yahid Geh Lampene
Sukre Yushaya
Yud Gimel Lamed Pei Zayin Kuf Shavatenu Kabel Ushmati Akatenu
Yudeh Tazimot
Shin Kufav Tzadi Yud Tav. And the eighth verse we say in a whisper. We're reading from the Parsha of Tav, from section 22, Two Fires, verse 157. Vayehi Noam Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu Maaseh Yadeinu Kunaneh Aleinu Maaseh Yadeinu Kunanehu. V'karban v'atvan hinum Yud Ba'ish Hei Ba'isha Vav Ba'kibbein Ha'chatan Hei Ba'kala Zaka'ayihu Man Diyak Riv Atvan Diyod Bad Ve Uvitte Uvidre Uvidrape Vikdusha Uvivracha Vimke Vimkiv Vianava Uvoshe Panim Beko Midot Tavin Dak Bin Amare Matnitin. The offering of the letters, namely the union of the letters of the name, is Yud in a man and He in a woman. The secret of Abba and Ima. Vav is a son, the groom, the secret of Zeron Pin, and He is the daughter, the bride, the secret of Malchut. Happy is he who unites and draws near the letters of Yud Hei Vav Hei. In him and his wife, conforming to Yud Hei, and in his son and daughter, conforming to Vav Hei. In holiness, with blessings, purity, modesty, humility, and all the good qualities mentioned by the sages of the Mishnah. this verse is describing the relationship of the Tetragrammaton to the Sephirot, and also to the the word will come to me in a minute. The complete structure of the Partsu. And this section of the two fires is describing the passion between a man and his wife in the drawing of his son and his daughter, and how all of that relates to the Tetragrammaton and the process of the Tetragrammaton. Because even the Tetragrammaton is a vessel to the true Creator, which we don't know anything about. Does anybody have any questions? Tonight's class, I believe, is the seventh class in the Advanced Reincarnation series. It may be the eighth, but I think it's the seventh. And the handout is the same as last week's class. And that's www.yeshem.com/Kabbalah Advanced Reincarnation 5.htm. I will spell the words www.yeshem.com, YESHSHEM.com. /Kabbalah, spelled KABBALAH, - advanced, ADVANCED, - reincarnation, REINCARNATION, - the number 5, the numeral 5, .htm. If you scroll down when the page opens up, if you scroll down about 45 to 50% of the way, you'll reach a line that says Levels of Rectification, Chapter 2, Section 2. And if you remember from last week, we were talking about the nighttime Shema, and we were talking about how the different three levels of soul first have to correct the lower level. And before the, assuming that we're talking about not the first reincarnation together, the Nefesh and the Ruach, and the Ruach and the Neshama come in a way that if once they are corrected, there must be a passing where the that soul has to die, go through the extent of dying, the process of dying, and then being reincarnated. And we went through and explained what the idea of the ger, the convert. But I had explained that by saying certain verses in the nighttime Shema, we were able to avoid the process of dying and being reincarnated, that it actually can take place in a given evening, in a given night, when your soul leaves your body and then returns in the morning. The soul itself may be somewhat different than with the soul that left the body the night before. So before I start, does anybody have any questions from last week? Because that discussion was rather extensive. Okay, I'm starting to read. If a person rectified his nefesh and came back to receive and complete his Ruach. But during that Gilgul, that incarnation, he sinned. Then his nefesh will not be affected in such a way that it would be forced to come back by itself to become rectified once again. And the commentary says, once the nefesh has been completely rectified and he has returned to work on Ruach, the nefesh is protected against any further damage. Otherwise, the rectification process could conceivably go on forever. I hope that's clear. If the rectification was to share a glass of water with someone, that was the correction. And once that glass of water has been shared, the correction is made. That same action that created the correction, being done in the next lifetime, will not impact the nefesh the same level, but it will impact the Ruach, the level that in that lifetime has the option or has the job of correcting itself. So if we assume that one of the discussions that the Kabbalists have is that from one lifetime to the next, what happens on the 400th day of that life and what happens on the 757th day of that life is exactly the same thing from one lifetime to the next. The astrology puts people into those positions where those same things happen. So if, for example, that I used a glass of water being exchanged, why is that the correction? Because in a previous incarnation, that nefesh didn't give that glass of water to that other soul. But now in this incarnation, it does. It gives the glass of water. The correction is made. Now the Ruach is going to be presented with that same incident, that same potential, because the same action, the same presentation takes place on that same day in the new incarnation. But if the Ruach doesn't give the glass of water, it doesn't impact the lower level, the nefesh that's already been corrected by that action. But what is not discussed is what happens if there is a new action, a new mistake performed by the Ruach that the nefesh never performed before. That is not discussed as of yet. Rather, because he now has a Ruach, the sin will only damage the Ruach, and only this will need rectification. Therefore, if an additional reincarnation is necessary to rectify the Ruach, then both the rectified nefesh and the blemished Ruach will come back. They will come back again together. This will continue until the Ruach is rectified, after which he will have to die in order for the rectified nefesh and Ruach to reincarnate with the neshama or a neshama. If he has accomplished this and then sins, then it will only damage the neshama, just as we explained with respect to the tikkun of the Ruach. However, there are different levels of rectification, and the above-mentioned procedure would be altered accordingly. It can also happen that the nefesh becomes rectified and purified to such a great extent that it need not come back again with the Ruach for the rectification of the Ruach. Rather, the nephesh remains above in a place fitting for it, bound up with the bundle of life. Commentary. One of the different levels of rectification is so complete that the level of soul that has been rectified does not need to ever come back again. In such a case, the Ruach would have to come back alone to rectify itself. However, this is not possible. The Ruach needs a garment to wear to be in this world. The Ruach, that garment, by the way, is a nefesh. The Ruach, this is commentary now, the Ruach cannot come down into a body without the presence of a nefesh. In this case, however, the nefesh that has undergone such a complete tikkun will not return to reincarnate. Therefore, it reincarnates with the nefesh of a convert. As it says in Saba de Mishpatim, in the Zohar, they will reincarnate together until the Ruach is rectified. The Ruach, therefore, will come down to join the nefesh of a convert, and they will reincarnate together until the Ruach is completely rectified. Once that is achieved, then the person dies, and the first nefesh comes back to join with that Ruach in order to receive and rectify the neshama. Or the Ruach may come back by itself with the neshama until the neshama is rectified, after which time the three of them no longer need to return and are instead bound up with the bundle of life as is fitting for them. Once all three levels of soul, nefesh, ruach, neshama, are rectified, there is no longer any need for gilgul, for reincarnation. It was said previously that the Ruach does not enter a body without the presence of a nefesh. In this case, however, where the Ruach was completed, when it was together with the nefesh of the convert, then the rectified Ruach may serve as the vehicle and base for the entry of its neshama, as if it were both nefesh and Ruach. In this case, therefore, the presence of a nefesh is not absolutely necessary. In any case, once all three levels of soul, nefesh, ruach, and neshama, are rectified, there is no longer any need for gilgul, and all three may remain bound up with the bundle of life as is fitting for them. My commentary. It is necessary to ask the question as to why the blemished ruach or neshama always reincarnates with the same corrected nefesh of a ger. This is best understood with a parable. There was a landowner who owned an orchard that was growing a crop of oranges. He knew he needed to protect the crop 24/7. There were only two applicants for the job. One was blind and one was a cripple. He hired both men and told them to guard the orchard together. After 3 months, he returned to the orchard and found the crop destroyed. He brought the two men in front of him and asked what happened. The blind man said he could not see and did not know what happened. The crippled man said he could not walk to the other side of the orchard and did not know anything was remiss. The landowner accepted these statements and then went to meditate while the two men awaited his return. When he returned, he told them he was docking their pay, since he knew that they were the ones who destroyed his crop by eating it. He said he knew that the two of them worked together. The blind man carried the cripple, while the crippled man told the blind man where to go. In this way, they ate their way through the orchard. The landowner said he could not punish one without the other. The same thing is true for the blemished ruach, or blemished neshama, along with the perfected nefesh. They work together and must redo the mistakes together. Even when the mistake does not cause the ger nefesh to blemish, he is still supporting and carrying the ruach in his mistake, and so they must correct the action together. As you understand this parable, here is another way to understand it. If a man is wearing a coat, an expensive coat, and that expensive coat and he bump into a car that the ornament on the hood of the car tears the coat and cuts his arm. He starts to bleed, and the bleeding gets on the coat. Now, the coat represents the nefesh, and it's corrected already. But isn't this hole in the coat new? And doesn't that new hole in the coat now have to be corrected? Well, it's corrected automatically because it's not affected. But they both suffered the trauma. They both experienced that trauma. And in that context, while the coat is repaired automatically, it still has some participation in the pain and suffering of the body, of the ruach. I'm trying to give you some limited understanding of how this system tends to work, as I understand it. The areas I'm continuing to make commentary from Rabbi Teichel. The Arizal now returns to consider the fate of the nefesh of the convert that has been the vehicle for the ruach that came into the world without its nefesh, because the latter had undergone such a complete tikkun. The nefesh of the convert that was joined to the ruach has helped it to perform good deeds in this world and has been a vehicle for it in this world. Through their union, the ruach was able to achieve its tikkun. This nefesh of the convert will also become elevated with the original nefesh of this particular ruach. The two of them will be on the same level in the world to come, like neighbors, and they will never part from one another. I caution you to remember that when we're using the term the nefesh of the ger, the nefesh of the convert, that my understanding is different than Rabbi Teichel's. He implies that the ruach can only come into this world with a nefesh of a ger. And my understanding is that nefesh can come from other people within the root of his soul, within the lineage of his soul root, where the nefesh has been completed, and it will come and help. That is discussed later in chapter 2. Now we are at chapter 2, section 3, receiving any bur. In this section, the Arizal will disclose new information concerning the concept of bur, which he has already discussed in chapter 1. Section 5. First, however, he will review the important rule that we have been studying in this chapter, Namely, if a nefesh achieves tikkun only in a subsequent gilgul and not in its first lifetime, then it cannot receive ruach in the same gilgul. The person must first die, and then his nefesh and ruach will be reincarnated together. If a nefesh reincarnates and becomes rectified through its actions to the point that it is ready for its ruach, he cannot receive his ruach, and it has been explained, if it is not his very first gilgul then. Two or three levels of soul cannot become unified in one reincarnation without great need, as we will mention later. Rather, each one requires its own gilgul. Only in the first gilgul can the nefesh, the ruach, and the neshama be rectified within one body. Remember this rule of reincarnation. My commentary. Also remember the idea of the corrected nefesh of the ger and how it stays with the blemished ruach even after death when it settles into the Garden of Eden as a neighbor. What is hinted to but not said explicitly is the corrected nefesh of the ger does not have a ruach of its own. This is what took place on Mount Sinai when the Jewish nation of souls was injected with a larger desire to receive. They received the level of neshama by receiving this additional desire to receive. This desire to receive came from the soul roots of the ger, at least in my opinion. This is why that particular corrected nefesh has the necessary affinity to be the blemished ruach. Continuing to read from the Arizal. First, the nefesh needs to be rectified, and even when this happens, he will not receive his ruach until after he dies. Then the nefesh can reincarnate and merit the ruach. The same is true of the two of them. If they cannot become, if they become rectified to the point that they are ready for their neshama, they cannot receive it until they reincarnate again. Then they can merit their neshama. As we have already learned, only in the first gilgul can the nefesh, the ruach, and neshama be rectified within one body. After that, the person must reincarnate to move from level to level, even if he finishes one level early. What happens for the nefesh that is already rectified but lacks a ruach? We are talking about after the first gilgul, when it is not possible to receive another level of his soul without reincarnation. What happens, though, in the meantime until reincarnation, if the nefesh is already rectified? This is the secret. From the same level of purity and extent of tikkun attainable by his nefesh, by this nefesh, there will reincarnate into the body of this person while he is still alive the nefesh of a righteous tzaddik that has already completed gilgulim and rectification and does not need to reincarnate here. By entering here, the nefesh of this tzaddik takes the place of the ruach of this person. A regular gilgul involves reincarnation from one lifetime to another. Thus, from the time that the nefesh has been rectified, the nefesh of a righteous person will enter him and fill the role of the ruach that cannot come down. Sometimes it is even possible for the souls of early tzaddikim, such as the nefesh of our patriarch Abraham, or similar souls, to reincarnate. This depends upon the tikkun and the purification of the nefesh of the person. Reincarnations of this type, which occur during the lifetime of a person, are called by the rabbis Sod Ibur, secret of Ibur. And this is the basic difference between a regular Gilgul and an Ibur. According to what we have learned here, a regular Gilgul involves reincarnation from one lifetime to another. Ibur, on the other hand, is the impregnation, which is the meaning of Ibur, of a person by the soul of a rectified righteous tzaddik. Because the nefesh has completed its tikkun, but it cannot receive ruach without reincarnating, since the tikkun did not take place in its very first gilgul. My commentary. There is another type of Ibur when a tzaddik has been reincarnated into a lower level of consciousness, like the material level or a plant or an animal. Then the soul needs to move up the chain to reincarnate into a human. Sometimes this happens by the process of ingestion, the plant taking in nutrients from the dissolved rock or river water, which includes the incarnated soul. Then this plant is eaten by an animal who elevates the incarnated soul to the next level. Finally, the soul moves on to the level of the human by being eaten by a human. This usually happens by the soul of a righteous person being incarnated in a fish that comes to a Shabbat table. This can also happen when a kosher animal comes to a Shabbat table. Only then the incarnated soul is not a righteous person yet. You should also realize that these elevations can only happen during certain months of the year for certain actions. An incarnated soul in a rock or a river can only elevate during Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, or Tammuz. During Av, Elul, Tishrei, and Cheshvan, the soul can move from plant level to the animal level. During Kislev, Tevet, Shvat, and Adar, the soul can move to the human level. While in the human level, the soul assists the human in achieving a particular correction associated with a particular mitzvah. Until that mitzvah is done and the correction achieved, the soul is an ibur for that human. I didn't write any outside commentary, but does anybody have any questions at this point?
I don't understand why the tzaddik would be reincarnated into that lower level. What does that...
Tzaddikim are incarnated into fish because there is an action, a mitzvah that they haven't completed.
Oh, okay.
But Creator knows, he knows everything. He knows that in this lifetime, when he becomes an Ibur in the particular human, that he will assist the human in doing that mitzvah. And as he assists that human in doing the mitzvah, they both receive credit for the action. And therefore, the tzaddik, that little gray area where he is, hasn't really corrected it. He hasn't completed that aspect of it. He gets credit for it, and that light is revealed in his soul. And another explanation that I heard why Tzaddikim can be incarnated into fish is a man has studied and worked and grown spiritually, and he has literally become a Tzaddik. But as he ages and he starts to not question God, but make a mistake in his 80s, in his 90s, in his elderly years, since it's the same incarnation, in other words, he's not corrected until he dies. But since he hasn't died, and earlier in his life he made the correction, but now he makes the mistake again, he's still considered a Tzaddik, but it has to be corrected. And the way it gets corrected is by helping another person make that same correction. So he's incarnated in a fish who lives in water. Water is mercy. It's chesed on the physical level. His whole life as in the fish is related to mercy, is related to chesed. And then he incarnates as an ibur, as the human eats the fish on Shabbat and elevates the soul of the human in the fish to become an ibur in the human. And then they will go through doing the action together, and the Tzaddik will become complete. I hope I've answered your question in a couple of different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So now we're talking about the Ibur of Righteous Souls, which is Chapter 2, Section 4. Sometimes it is possible, even in this late period of history, for the ruach of a righteous tzaddik, even from one of the forefathers, to come as an ibur. It will all depend upon the level of the mitzvot being performed by the person. Some mitzvot have the power to draw down the nefesh of a righteous tzaddik into ibur, whereas others can draw down the ruach of the tzaddik. My commentary. The tzaddik, if it becomes to a person, will be from the same root as that person's soul. Since all Jewish souls stem from the patriarchs, even persons including a physical convert has the same possibility of receiving the help of the patriarchs. It is also possible for a person to receive the nefesh of one righteous person, and after that merit another nefesh from another righteous person, even greater than the first. In such a case, he will have his own nefesh. The nefesh of the first righteous person becomes his ruach, and the second higher nefesh acting in the place of his neshama. Thus, in one lifetime, he can merit a ruach and neshama, though not his own. Or perhaps the nefesh will be perfected to the point that after already receiving the nefesh of a righteous person, he will merit the ruach of a second righteous person, even possibly the ruach of Abraham, the patriarch. There is no generation in which there is not someone like Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, or Samuel. These are the words of the sages in the Talmud, and this is the explanation by the Ari. In this case, the ruach of the second tzaddik will act as his neshama, and the nefesh of the first tzaddik will act as his ruach. This is the inner meaning of what they wrote in the Midrashim, in particular Midrash Shmuel, Samuel. There is no generation in which there is not someone like Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, or Samuel, etc. In other words, there are people in every generation who may actually have the nefesh or ruach of these great people from the past. There is no pen that will prove sufficient to record all of the details in a book about all of these rules. Nevertheless, an understanding person will comprehend and make the necessary inferences on his own. In summary, based upon the tikkun and purification of a particular nefesh, it can even merit a neshama from the earliest generations, including the most elevated of all, and it can happen even in this generation of ours, being so far from Adam, so far from the earlier generations, from the greater generations. Furthermore, it is exactly the same when a nefesh and ruach reincarnate together and become rectified, but are unable to acquire their neshama without first dying and reincarnating. They can receive the nefesh, ruach, or neshama of a righteous tzaddik as an ibur, and it will act as their neshama. All of the details that were described in the case of the nefesh alone that has completed its tikkun will apply here also. On occasion, it can happen that all three levels of soul will reincarnate together and become rectified. Then the nefesh or ruach of a righteous tzaddik may impregnate him as an ibur. When he leaves this world, he will ascend to the same level as the righteous tzaddik that came to him as an ibur in the world to come. They will actually be on the same level. Although his own soul was not originally on the same level as that of the righteous tzaddik, he has now merited ascending to that level forever. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said that in that world, the world to come, that he and Rav Hamuna Saba would be shining together. This is the inner meaning of what is written in the introduction to Zohar Bereshit 7a. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai fell on his face and he saw Rav Hamuna Saba. He said that in that world, the world to come, both he and Rav Hamuna Saba would be shining together. Since the soul of Rav Hamuna Saba was within Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai as an ibur, they would be on the same level in the world to come. This is enough, wrote the Ari. My commentary. Do you think it is enough? Why does a righteous soul come as an ibur and do this, due to this effect, cause the rising of the soul of a person to reach a level higher than originally merited? Is there no bread of shame associated with this, receiving something for nothing on the level of completion of tikkun? Yet, as it was said above, one who has reached the appropriate level will know. Are there any questions?
I had an experience many years ago that keeps coming to mind that I never have really understood, but we were driving to, I don't know, I never really had a lot of practice with driving on the highway because I always taught at the schools that were very close to home. And so that summer, my husband to let me. Are you still there?
I'm here, yes.
I was not thinking of anything. What is it?
I'm waiting for you to ask your question.
Okay. Well, it's not really a question. It's just an incident that happened that, anyway, I wasn't thinking of anything spiritual, but all of a sudden it was like a shade moved on the windshield, and I saw, well, I heard a voice that said, I want to introduce you to someone, and it was like I knew this was Queen Esther, and before I could say anything, she knelt and said, Your Majesty, and it shook me up so badly, I had to stop, you know, I had to get off the highway and let Tony take over. Would that have been an Ebor? Or was that, or can you tell me what that, you know, what that meant, or what significance it would have had? I know I very much identified with Esther being in exile, and even at the time of our conversion, it was the week of Purim. It was just the 18th of Adar, right after.
The answer to your first question is yes, it could have been an Ebor. The other question that could be asked, or that I would ask, would be what is the meaning in your life for that experience? In other words, nobody is given information about these kinds of spiritual things without they needing that information in order to achieve their tikkun. So knowing what is the root of your soul as a ger, as a convert, as you know, you're the daughter of Abraham and you're the daughter of Sarah. The root of your soul doesn't necessarily go back to Abraham and Sarah. And so you needed to be given that information that the root of your soul is through Esther. But then you learn later, as we have taught and we've discussed, the root of Esther's soul is Sarah. And the root of Sarah's soul is Abba. And as you begin to understand this chain of souls, this chain of reincarnations, you need that information to achieve your full tikkun. Now, I have a similar experience on a Shabbat afternoon. As we know, it's not a mitzvah as part of the 613 mitzvot. But it's such a pleasure that it's really a mitzvah to sleep on Shabbat afternoon, to take a nap. And what happens during that nap is you are given a Shabbat soul. An Ebor comes just for the day, for the last few hours or even minutes, in order to enable your body consciousness to handle the light that it has received through the Torah reading and the energy of Shabbat. And I remember an experience of waking up from that nap on one of the summer afternoons that are relatively long and watching a white essence, nondescript essence. It wasn't a body, it wasn't a person. I couldn't describe what it was, but I know what I saw. An essence gently leaving and flying up. Through that process, I saw that. I wasn't giving any information about it, except at that moment, the thought occurred to me that Eliyahu had come and taught me. Now, that's really chutzpah for me to say. I don't know if that's true. But ultimately, no experience that you have has no purpose. I hope I've helped you with the, whatever it is that I answered there.
Yes, it does.
The worldview, and it's such a misnomer for me to say the worldview, but I have no idea who's going to listen to these recordings in 100 years and what their view of the world will be. Hopefully it will be closer to Hashem than I am. But ultimately, we have experiences, and there is no experience in the world, no incident in our lives, no incident in history, no incident in cause and effect. Hashem is involved in all of it. And so nothing happens that isn't part of the macrocosm, part of the plan of creation. And nothing happens that isn't the microcosm, which is how to motivate you to become the better person, the most best person you can become. This is the indication. This is the nature. So, you know, I once heard a drash being given by a student rabbi. And she was expressing her worldview, her belief system. And she knew that God was involved with the world and was in control of the world. Up until the point where it was painful and someone was sick and leaving, she couldn't accept that God was involved with that. She couldn't see that that process was merciful. And therefore, she couldn't see that the God she knew to be true wasn't involved with that. And because of that limitation, you know, Bezrat Hashem, in her process, she'll come to understand that. You know, I frequently joke, God is a micromanager. You know, he's involved in everything, and nothing happens without his control. And this is the way we truly need to see the world. Why is that true for everybody? Because you cannot truly appreciate the cause and effect relationship until you understand that the cause is always Hashem. Even if I can't see the cause, but somebody walks up to me when I'm thirsty and hands me a glass of water, I thank the person, but I also have to thank God. This is part of the mistake that the generation of Enosh made way back at the beginning of the process. Any other questions? Okay, we have a class Thursday at 10 o'clock. It's preparation for the Passover holiday, Pesach holiday. And the same classes, or a different class, but the same process of preparation will be at 10:30 Sunday morning. Saturday evening at 10 p.m. will be a Zohar class. Next Monday and Tuesday, it's the Seder. So there will not be classes. And the following week is the seventh day and the eighth day. So there will not be classes as well. Please check the calendar or the list of classes in the weekly emails, because they will describe when there are classes and what the titles are. I wish you all a wonderful Passover, a wonderful Pesach, with the light of redemption. And as you will come to understand in the preparation, the light that comes on Pesach is the same light, the light of the Torah that is revealed on Shavuot. But there is a difference. The night of Pesach is free. There's no bread of shame associated with it. The light of Shavuot, the light of the Torah, has to be earned through the counting of the Omer, through the process of Tikkun. Any questions before we sign off? Have a beautiful evening and a beautiful week.
Thank you.
And a wonderful Pesach holiday.
Thank you. And of course.